When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Friday, May 3rd, 2024, and you know what? It's a celebratory day, because we're back, baby, Around the Nest 2024. Tyler Zickel from High A Vancouver, and we've got a full nest today as we're thrilled to enter our second season on the Fans First Sports Network in conjunction with Joshua Halson's Artificial Turf Wars Blue Jays podcast, and of course, an extra special welcome to our listeners from Bluebird Banter. Gentlemen, good to see all of you today. Pat Malacaro from AAA Buffalo, Chris Jarrett joining us from AA New Hampshire, and Larry Larson from Single A Dunedin. A couple of new guys here on the nest here in 2024. So let's meet the hatchlings. Let's start at the lowest level of the ladder just to say what's up. Larry Larson, Double L, good day to you, my friend. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing down there in Dunedin in your first season with the DJs, and just give us a little bit of background on your nest debut.
Tyler, gentlemen, great to virtually meet you all. Appreciate the invitation. So far, so good down here in Dunedin. Obviously, we'll dive into the baseball a little bit later, but I'm a native of Illinois, so down here in April, a little bit nicer than Illinois or Wisconsin in April. Came to the DJs after two seasons with the Beloit Skycarp and the Miami Marlins organization. So happy to be here, and it's been fun.
Happy to have you indeed, Larry. And now the man with two first names, Mr. Chris Jarrett, good day to you. Joining us, I believe, from Somerset, New Jersey, or one of the surrounding towns in the Garden State. Welcome to the nest, my friend.
Appreciate it, Zick. Yes, three first names, Christopher and middle name Thomas. So I get razzed on that a good bit. But I do want to start in 2017. Jesse Goldberg Strassler asked if I wanted to hop on the nest. I do believe that that was my debut 7 years ago. So it's been a long time, and happy to be back. So we can say that. But Jesse asked me, he goes, do you want to be on a podcast today? And I said, sure. And I don't know what it looked like 7 years ago, but it was that was the first time. So I'm happy to be back.
Oh my gosh. Well, Chris, welcome back. And indeed, that might have been the season I made my nest debut as well, in my first season with the Cats. So here we are, back like we never left. So cheers to you, my friend, and looking forward to those AA New Hampshire updates. But as we do, we've got to start with the one and only Pat Malacaro. Pat, good day. AAA Buffalo, what a fun month plus of this season it's been. You're coming to us from Indianapolis. A couple of tough losses, in fact, three in a row. But you know what? I'm loving this brand of Bison's baseball.
Hey, Tyler. Yeah, I mean, it's been a much different story here, at least in April in 2024, than it was in 23. And a lot of it's because of the players that finished the year in Buffalo last year. The offense got off to a slow start last year, and that's no surprise. Larry mentions the weather up in the Northeast and in the Midwest in April. Well, you know, we know Buffalo isn't the easiest place to play in over the first month of the season, but the Bison offense clubbed 34 home runs. Relvis Martinez led the way with seven in the opening month of the season. Damiano Pomigiani, Nathan Lucas, I mean, you name veterans, prospects, everybody had a little hand in it. So it was a lot of explosive offense to start the season, and maybe the most prospect-heavy lineup that we've seen in the Blue Jay affiliation era. I'm go back long enough and basically the entire modern era of Bison baseball. I was born before 85, but I wasn't necessarily a Bison fan in 85. But you look back at some of the great teams of the late 90s and early 2000s, and then Cleveland Indians era. What was the main thread? A lot of great prospects that went on to have very good, if not Hall of Fame, major league careers, adding in veterans to the mix. I'm not going to go as far to say the prospects right now, we're projecting them all to be major league Hall of Famers. But you know, you look over the players that are here on this roster now, top 30 prospects in the pipeline. So I think that that has a lot to do with it. A young team, but not AAA game young in terms of the Bison roster.
You know, in my seven seasons in the organization now, it seems like this is the most homegrown talent on the Bison's roster. And I'm glad you alluded to that, Pat. And it seems like these guys are setting the vibes, whereas in years past, maybe it's a different experience. And you've talked about it on the Nest in seasons past about how you've got to get guys in from out of the org. You got to fill that AAA roster, whether they're 4A guys or big leaguers who are now trying to make it in a different organization. But it seems like this group really is leading the way at the top level of the minor league ladder.
Yeah, and you've seen a lot of those players in the last couple of years, and I think that's something we're going to continue to see in the minor leagues, a shifting away from the veteran-heavy AAA lineups to guys drafted 2, 3, even 1 year ago already making it up to AAA because maybe their stuff is just dominant at those lower levels. There's fewer players in the depth pool now. Look at Chad Dallas and how he's elevated up through the organization in just a couple of years. Of course, he pitched collegiately at a high level at University of Tennessee. So you've already got that built-in, you know, success and you know, pedigree from coming from the SEC. But it's only a couple of years since he's been drafted in 2021. That was almost unheard of going back, except for those exceptional top-end talents, top couple of round draft picks maybe in the first couple of years. But now, since we've come out of the reshuffling of minor league baseball, the draft, and all that process, guys like Chad Dallas will get to AAA faster than ever. Mason Fluharty gets to AAA faster than ever and has been maybe the most consistent bullpen arm for Buffalo, especially being left-handed, such a valuable piece to add to the arsenal. So in the pitching side of things, I think that's where the most growth will come this year. Chad Dallas still hasn't picked up a win yet in a Bison uniform, not for a lack of success. At least, you know, the ability is there. He's just had a couple of tough luck efforts the last couple of outings, including against Indianapolis as we record this last night. The wins will be there. This will be a work in progress all year long. And I don't mean that as a negative towards Chad Dallas, but I think he's going to figure it out here at this level, where in the past you figured out at AA, you figured out in high A, and then you eventually graduate to AAA. Well, now it's a lot of on the job experience, so to speak, for players that wouldn't have been here in the past.
Let's go there a little bit more, Pat. I'm glad you brought that up about the reshuffling of the minor league ladder. We're seeing it at every level where guys, let's just say pre-pandemic as the marking point, wouldn't necessarily be even in high A here with the Vancouver Canadians. They would be figuring it out, as you said, down in those lower rookie levels. And of course, the complex leagues are getting started in a few days or so. But from your perspective, Pat, someone who's been in this game for a good long time, both as a broadcaster, as a fan, as a bat boy, as it all, does it seem like there is still going to be some figuring it out for these organizations where they're going to put these college draft picks like a Chad Dallas, like a Mason Fluharty out of Liberty? We've got more D3 guys here in high A Vancouver than I've ever seen. And as a former D3 baseball player myself, that makes me feel great. But it's just interesting to see with these less minor league affiliates now how teams are putting guys in different spots.
I think we've seen that process play out over the last couple of years. And now we're at a spot where this is where we're going to be at, because as you mentioned, pre-pandemic, you know, there were so many rounds of the draft, so many players available in your depth pool. Well, now with the ability to have only, I think, 165 players total within the organization, you know, that limits the roster. So you're going to see players now here coming up to AAA faster than ever. And, you know, for better or worse, you're going to see the abilities. And I think we've seen the weeding out process, hate to put it that way, but, you know, to use a technical term, of the players that maybe would have been on the cut line in the past and maybe a shuffle from AA to AAA back and forth a little bit. Well, now you don't have the ability to keep those players in the organization as much as you used to be able to. And you mentioned it, you know, you've got the complex league starting up very soon. You've got the draft coming up around the All-Star game. we have to make room for all those players. So that's why we've maybe seen a lot of the veterans, and a name that comes to mind, like Rob Brantley last year, a veteran catcher that was so valuable to the organization, but they just needed a spot. And when you had a couple of young catchers, and Bill Clark still in Double A right now with a lot of potential out of Vanderbilt, you know, you don't have the ability to maybe stash the veteran players that you would have in the past, or the players that have been in the org for quite a few years now. So I think we've seen that process play out, and now we're at a leveling off point where this is where the minor leagues are going to be at, and players are adjusting to that and have adjusted the last couple of years.
A guy who has certainly adjusted to International League pitching, two of them I'd like to talk about. One does it with eye-popping power. Another does it with hits after hits after hits. It seems like three hits at the top of the order every night. So let's start with the pride of Timonium, Maryland, Spencer Horwitz, or as I said, so sarcastically, but also kind of seriously, Spencer Moore hits in our rundown. It just seems like he's racking up the knocks every night.
The base hits, and again, I'll go back to his plate discipline, something we've talked about in the past as well. He had the best on-base percentage in about 40 years in the International League last year. That it wasn't just a great year. It was a historic year at the plate for Spencer Horwitz. And I think his plate discipline, something that the Blue Jay organization has bought into and maybe is at the forefront of teams offensively looking ahead to what could be the ABS era or challenge era of Major League Baseball sooner rather than later, players like Spencer Horwitz are going to be more valuable. He knows that at his size, and this isn't a knock, but you know, at 5'10", 6 foot tall, you're going to have an advantage over guys that are 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", because the strike zone is smaller. And if you have the ability to challenge, or here in AAA, 3 days a week, the strike zone is the strike zone. There's no ambiguity. Hawkeye will calibrate and call the balls and strikes. You can work better pitches. When you work walks, you force the pitcher to throw the ball in the zone. And for Spencer Horwitz, who's a great contact hitter, above average, that leads to more success. So top 10 in batting average in the league entering play today at about 350. His on-base percentage, second in the league right now, and it's even better than it was last year. I think for Spencer Horwitz, he is one of the players that has adapted to this era of baseball at AAA faster than anybody else maybe in the organization and among all AAA players overall in general, I think, and makes himself so valuable. Played left field a little bit last night. That's an aspect of his game. When you look at someone like Addison Barger, why did he go to the big leagues about a week ago? Well, that athleticism and versatility. Never had played in left field before, and I know there was a miscue in his first game out in Kansas City, but he made up for it later in the game and has played a little bit more left field, can play right, the infield as well. I think for Horwitz, if he continues to get those reps in the outfield, adding to the fact that he can play first base for you at a moment's notice, that'll make him even more valuable when the hits keep coming.
Spencer Horwitz just setting records wherever he goes, highest on base percentage in the International League in 4 decades. He owns the longest hitting streak in Northwest League history in this in over 2 centuries, in fact, and a guy certainly we're going to be seeing back in a Blue Jays uniform sooner rather than later. A guy who may don the Blue Jays blue and white for the first time sometime soon, depending on how it shakes out, Aurelvis Martinez. Let's finish with the exciting young prospect who certainly has ridden the roller coaster, but it seems like 2024, after flashes of greatness last year, he is busting out in a big way and really making the Blue Jays have to make a tough decision soon.
Yeah, 15-game hitting streak, basically from the start of the season, hit a hit in 15 of the first 17 games this year. A lot of loud contact. And that's one thing we talk about overall in the Bison offense. There's loud contact everywhere. Whether it's Aurelvis Martinez, Cam Eden has had a really strong year at the plate, barreling up. You know, something is talked about so often in the organization. These guys just barrel up. And even when they make outs for Aurelvis Martinez, rarely does he hit the ball under 100 miles an hour. Hit a titanic home run in Columbus, in which, talking to the folks with the Clippers, they had never seen anyone in memory hit the building that's about 15, 20 feet recessed behind the stands. He hit it on the second level. It was estimated by the Statcast as 469. Probably was a little bit further than that because, you know, it's basically all they could estimate. So it was one of the most monster home runs. And I've seen Vladdy hit a few in the minor leagues as well. And he's tattooed the ball. That was maybe the best home run I've seen in terms of, you know, you knew it was gone right away. You knew it was going to be long gone. And for Aurelvis, he's picked up a lot of that success at the end of last year. Talk about a player who spent 2.5 months with Buffalo, end of July through the end of last season. He's just continued to work in the offseason. Now a regular second baseman. I know the question comes up all the time. I was asked of it on the Fan 590 about a week ago, 10 days ago. I still think second base is where Aravis Martinez ends up, not just because Bo Bichette is at shortstop right now, but he's already transitioned over to second. Leo Jimenez is your everyday shortstop. And I think the arm angle at which Aravis will throw the ball at lends him to less inaccuracies at second base. I think his mobility at second base is an asset to his as well. I've seen him go up the middle, robbing a couple of the base hits, can go left, can go right. I think that really probably is the position that plays the best for Martinez. So that comfortability level in the field, you see a play out in terms of the offense, the plate as well. This is probably the most complete season. Probably not. It is the most complete season, at least to start for Aravis Martinez in his young career.
It's been a month plus of AAA baseball. So, Pat, I'm sure we could spend an entire episode dissecting what's been going on with the herd. But as we wrap up with you and before we talk with Chris Jarrett in AA New Hampshire, anybody we missed, anything that's worth noting here in this first full episode of Around the Nest? I know you and I did a little spring training edition a month plus ago, but anybody that is worth talking about here in this first episode on May 3rd?
I think the catching depth here in Buffalo this year is one thing that really is noticeable again this season. And I think the fact that you have veteran catchers and Brian Servin to go along with Peyton Henry. Servin was in the big leagues to start the season with Danny Jansen on the IL, but I think it's so valuable to have those players here in Buffalo. Max McDowell as well. There's three catchers on the roster right now. I mentioned Phil Clark earlier and still a prospect in the organization. As he's developing in New Hampshire, I think the ability to call up a Brian Servin or a Peyton Henry, they've added some offense to this team, is so invaluable in this day and age where, look, Danny Jansen, it's tough luck every single season. He maybe hopefully got out of the way in spring training this year and is smooth sailing. Alejandro Kirk, his ability to catch every couple of days as well. I think that is one noticeable thing for Buffalo is it's not a prospect pool in terms of catching depth this year, but it's the veterans. And when you look at what the needs of the Blue Jays could be, saw Tyler Heineman go back to the big leagues last year with Toronto. It's never a bad thing to have some veteran depth on a 40-man eligibility in Servin, or even not on the 40 right now, Peyton Henry.
Pat, you're wrapping up a series in Indianapolis this weekend. The center of the sports universe with the Pacers doing their thing, making a little bit of a run here, but it's Buffalo trying to spoil the party in Indianapolis over these next 3 days, and then back home to take on the Woo Sox, as always. Fun when Worcester's in town. How can we stay up to date with all things Bison's baseball and tune into your broadcasts?
Yeah, best way possible, head over to bisons.com. For those of you tuning in from across the border in Canada, it's a region-free broadcast that you can find at our website. If you're in the States, find us on the Odyssey app. Search the Bet1520. You can always follow us on social media as well. We tweet out links to the game every night at Buffalo Bisons, at Pat WGR, if you want to see my travels throughout the road cities and what I've done during the day. And yeah, checked out the plaza over at Gainbridge Fieldhouse before the game yesterday. So it's a fun time here in the Circle City, and looking forward to getting back home and see old friend Tyler Murray next week with the Woo Sox.
That's a cosign for me, by the way, at Pat WGR. Follow along, because Pat always gives you not just the great baseball stuff, but a little slice of life in the International League. And our man and now big leaguer, Tyler Murray, who maybe we can convince to get on the Nest sometime around the way, if he can find some time in his WEEI schedule, he might join us. But AAA Buffalo, Pat Malacaro, as always, my friend, thanks for the great stuff.
Always great to chat with you, Tyler. Thanks.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Let's hop one rung down on the ladder. Chris Jarrett, AA New Hampshire. Good day, my friend. Somerset, New Jersey. A wild one last night for the Fisher Cats. A 10-9 final over those dastardly Yankees who always seem to find a way to at least cause us some stress.
Oh, it was insane. Last night, I feel like I was talking with Bob and Ian away from the broadcast, and it just felt like last night aged you, just having it from a game presentation standpoint. But this is a Somerset team that has already gone to Manchester, and we are going to see them again in 2 weeks as well, come back to Delta Dental Stadium. So a Somerset team in New Hampshire that have been, you know, acclimated with each other already out of the gate. But Somerset pounds the baseball, and that's been the big task for the pitching staff coming into the series, is that what they were able to do at Delta Dental Stadium the last time we saw them. It was a very hitter-friendly series. And a team that leads Double A in the home runs that they've been able to hit, total bases, and a slugging percentage as well. And with that, you would think the strikeouts, but they strike out going into yesterday's game, was looking at it, seventh fewest of Double A clubs. So on top of how they are able to just bop the baseball, it seems like it's a tough assignment. And was talking with Devereaux Harrison, who, you know, just getting acclimated to the Double A level, and talking about him and what was the first shutout win 2 nights ago for New Hampshire, as the pitching staff continues to try to get acclimated with the guys that they've had, as what you were talking about with Pat, a little bit of a logjam, guys that maybe would be experiencing some promotions right now, and Jimmy Burnett, Ryan Boyer, Trevor Clifton, guys that are much older that would be Triple A guys, a team that doesn't strike out, and Devereaux Harrison, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, but 3 hits, scoreless for 5 innings, as he's continuing to try to settle in. And just talking with him, and he said, you know, no, not a lot of strikeouts. I'd like to have more strikeouts, but again, I'll take 5 innings shutout any day. But last night's game, that's what gives me confidence about this Fisher Cats team, is that they went through a bit of a skid in the Binghamton series at home, and the week prior in Portland, a loaded Portland roster and a really good Portland team, tons of prospects. And same with the Yankees Double A, who have 10 of the top 30 guys currently in Bridgewater. So it's been a fun, really, first 3 games. It was a close one Tuesday night that, you know, we're on the downside of, but back-to-back wins, and they're feeling pretty good, but it's been a tax. Last night was taxing, I'll tell you that.
This group in New Hampshire, Chris, of course, I have a special kinship wish, because all of them essentially were champions last year for High A Vancouver in the Northwest League. In fact, our hitting coach here in Vancouver, Ryan Wright, who has been with me since I started in 2021, we've got a great relationship, but we had a laugh the other day. It's the Fisher Seas up there doing their thing, and it's really easy to root for, including a guy who was one of my favorites last year, Josh Kasevich. He continues to rake.
He does, and he got his first home run about a week and a half ago in Manchester of the season. But a guy that really isn't, you know, the contact, and the contact is there. It's going to be the power where he continues to drive the alleys that's going to come and develop as he gets on. But you talk about a guy that is a great person off the field and on the field as well, but a professional that's locked in to what he does best. And talking with him just throughout the season, a guy that's super comfortable in knowing that when he tries to be a hitter that he's not, that's when he slides a little bit. And when he sticks to what he is, and just a guy that has a great, really a zone of the field, the zone, it does not strike out a whole lot. And a guy that can see pitches really well. And that's great to see. You look at his percentage and his batting average, a guy that's just new to the Double A level, that's loaded with talented arms. That jump, when you go from High A to Double A, as you know, is one of the toughest jumps that you can make, is because you see guys that have been at the Double A level for maybe 2-3 seasons, and they're used to these hitters, and you're not getting the same pitches that you would maybe at High A. It's a much more tighter around the edges of the zone. So for Kasevich, for Josh, he's just a professional. He has a great attitude. Really, a lot of these guys do. And that's been what's been the fun part, is about the transition going from a championship season in Vancouver and keeping a lot of that core intact. And you're mixing that with guys that have been around Manchester for a couple of seasons. It's been mixing pretty well here to start.
That group last year, tons of comeback wins. It was the never quit Canadians a season ago. And it does seem like that ethos, if you will, has been carried over to this first season for a lot of these guys in the first level of the upper minors. How about a guy like Alan Roden, similar to Kasevich, great understanding of the zone, a very unique stance up there on the left side of the dish, gives you a lot of contact at the top of the order and some sneaky pop. And another one of those guys like Kasevich, who in my experience, a pro's pro and very much a machine when it comes to the work that they're trying to do.
Alan and Josh at the top of the order have been really just a mainstay throughout a majority of the season early out of the gate. And Cass now leads Vancouver with his 20 RBI, as he was able to get 4 in last night's game. So it's been a nice machine of Roden finding his way on base, and he's got good speed for an outfielder. and then Kasevich, the ability to drive to the gaps and continue to rack up doubles. That's worked really, really well. Allen's great. And, you know, there've been a lot of noise early on about guys that have been able to ease into the level. And Roden last year jumped from high A to double A and was able to reach base safely in his first 9 games. So a guy that was able to not really flinch at the promotion and welcome it, so to speak, and has just been locked in. You know, a guy that knows a lot of the people that he's playing with, as most do at double A, seeing old faces that you've played with in college or in summer ball or Cape League or years past or whatever it may be. And he is the guy that is able to go up and, again, not a lot of strikeouts, where he's able to see the zone really well and just be a tough assignment for pitchers, where if he can get on base and do the thing that he does, and we're seeing now production from the bottom of the order as well. Guys are coming around like Devontae Brown that we can talk about a little bit more later, but guys that are able to get on base. Michael Turconi leads the Eastern League in on-base percentage. So there's guys that are able to float action back to the top of the lineup and give RBI spots to Roden and Kasevich, Garrett Spain, and just continue to keep the wheels turning. So to go on that point of the never quit C's or the never quit Canadians of what you were talking about, they have been the cardiac cats this season early on. We had Somerset at Delta Dental Stadium, and we were down 7-1 and 8-3 at different points of that ballgame and would come from behind and win. And just another wild one with Somerset. I'm really excited to see the back end of this season. Wouldn't be surprised if it is Somerset and New Hampshire towards the top, jostling for position in the Northeast. But it's been so much fun to watch these guys make that transition in their young careers.
You know, you brought up Garrett Spain already, and I am exceedingly biased. I talk about all these guys that I enjoy, but Garrett Spain, over 2 seasons with the Canadians, him and I developed a very special friendship and really enjoyed watching Spainer over the course of his time with the C's. The power is starting to emerge for the Pride of Clarksville, Tennessee. I think it was his 6th homer of the year last night. We know what he can do on defense. In fact, down at spring training, he was named as the minor league defensive player of the year for 2023. So it seems like, after starting the season on the development list in 2023 and then just bursting onto the scene, and it became the summer of Spain in Vancouver a year ago, seems like he's picking up where he left off.
He is, and he's a guy that's got a ton of speed as well. And the batting average is probably not maybe where he would like it to be right now. But that's the thing with this offense, and Pat is seeing it in AAA as well, is that if someone isn't having their night, there's guys that have been able to pick him up pretty well in wins that we've seen so far. Spain's home run came in the top of the 9th, and it eventually was the decisive run. We needed that extra run where Somerset had the bases loaded. They got one across in the bottom of the 9th, and then Ian Churchill comes in with the bases loaded and gets a pop out on Spencer Jones, Yankees' second prospect. So last night's game was, it felt like the last team to the plate would win. And fortunately, it was Jimmy Burnett trying to go for a 6-out win and ultimately goes to Ian Churchill, a fellow lefty matchup against Jones. And that's been great. So needed that production from Spain. What an outfield arm, too, that we see from him. So not only if he's not having it offensively, he can cover so much ground if he's stuck in center field. And it's just a guy on the defensive end that has helped lead the Fisher Cats to second best fielding percentage by 1 point in the Eastern League. But a team that does not make a ton of errors. They field the ball incredibly well in the infield, and then strong outfield play with a lot of speed in between Brown and Spain and Roden, the usuals in the outfield that just cover a ton of ground.
Garrett Spain has passed on, if you will, some of his defensive prowess to some of the players behind him in the organization. I'm thinking specifically of Desaun Brown, who, of course, is a top 30 prospect, still just 21 years old and playing his way through what is his 3rd season in high A right now. Just has to hit his way to go and join you, Chris, in double A New Hampshire. But I was chatting with Desaun the other day, and of course, Brown's got 80 grade athleticism. He could go play center field in the major leagues right now, still working on that accuracy of his arm and the arm strength. But he told me in spring training, he was working with Spainer on really trying to come down through the ball and really whip it from the outfield and focus on, almost like a pitcher does, really trying to get that flick off the ends of your fingers. And it seems like a Spain suddenly becoming a guy that you circle in the organization, that in an organization at the big league level that's got great outfielders already, well, suddenly this is a guy who could continue that tradition as he makes his way up the ladder. Have there been any notable defensive plays, whether it's from Garrett Spain or from anybody else on defense, that has really caught your eye and sticks in your memory over this first month of the year?
Well, I've been incredibly impressed by the play of Alex DeJesus at third base, who was an acquisition by the Blue Jays in 22 with the Dodgers, a guy that also was kind of floating around the high A level with the Loons and didn't really quite crack it in Tulsa for the Dodgers, and really a staple, just kind of a corner piece that you can stick at third that makes great, tremendous plays at that hot corner and a great arm to get it across the infield. Josh Kasevich as well is rarely on the wrong side of any hot bouncers towards his way. In the outfield, there is that short wall in right field that can carry him off to right fielders and make what would normally be a stand-up or a sliding double a play. There's a play to be made at second base, and Alan Roden knows that wall very well. He got acclimated with it last year, and a lot of balls that he's able to field pretty well, pretty clean off of the right field wall, and already once this year he's gotten a batter out at second trying to stretch it to a double. You know, we talked about Garrett Spain's athleticism. He's had some nice plays where he has had to lay out, one that we had in Manchester where he dove straight towards home and was able to make a catch. And it's huge for this pitching staff that has a defense behind him, because it is, Tyler, the pitching staff that is still trying to take that turn. One of the softer throwing staffs in AA. But again, arms that won in Vancouver that are now trying to get the mix of AA and settling into their starts. Michael Dominguez has not really shown the high strikeout games that we had seen from him in years past, but he's still trying to ease in. He now has three consecutive five-inning starts. Devereaux Harrison as well. But if you're getting the weak contact, pop-ups, or balls maybe that might stand a chance, and you've got the speed in the arms that the Fisher Cats do with Spain and Roden in the outfield and center and right, Devontae Brown can slide in there and give you great speed as well. That gives these guys, I don't want to say it eases things up a little bit, but it gives them the freedom to be a little bit more aggressive, knowing that they've got a defense behind them that can make some plays.
I'm curious to know, Chris, as we wrap up with our AA updates for this edition, if there's anybody that we missed. I know you alluded to Devontae Brown. He was a guy who played his way into a whole lot of attention last year and got a well-deserved promotion to the Fisher Cats at the end of last season. That was actually kind of a funny moment for us here in Vancouver, because Devo, one of the most beloved players on last year's roster, a guy who lets his play do most of the talking, but also when he speaks, you listen. And of course, the Canadians were pushing for the playoffs and wound up winning the championship, of course. And so when Devontae got promoted, it was mixed feelings, because they wanted Devo to be a part of that late season run and the playoff push. He was very much at the center of the vibes of the team as well. But of course, everybody's rooting for him. There was a video where I think it was like eight guys went to his room and surprised him with the news that he got promoted. So just an example of what Devontae Brown adds to the team off the field. So whether it's Devontae, you talked briefly about Ian Churchill, who's off to a solid start. Mad Mike Dominguez is going to find his way. Also might have the freshest start day fits that anybody has ever seen. Is there anybody that we missed?
Well, you know, we haven't really mentioned a whole lot about Rainer Nunez and Miguel Giraldo, two guys that are going to be heating up here as the season goes on. Rainer just naturally out of the gate doesn't have hot starts in the colder weather, and it's something that he's comfortable with. But the size that he has of a young first baseman, just 23, 24 years old, and someone that has been barreling the ball, but just getting very unfortunate, bouncing into double plays and continuing to try to ease into, and just seems like he's got a different persona as well. Hearing from people that he is a much different guy than what he was last year to this year, where last year he was the vibes guy on the field and off the field, a little looser. And again, don't know the exact conversations, but seems a lot more locked in, taking things seriously at the AA level, knowing the potential that he's got. So I know that the start for Rainer Nunez is not going to be the constant of what we see from him throughout the season. And that couldn't be more true about Miguel Giraldo. Last year in 2023 in April, a batting average over 300 in the month of April, and that was his best go until August when things were really heating up. And pretty much a consensus, Zick, on guys around the team that there's no one right now more unlucky at the plate with batted balls than Miguel Giraldo. Seeing him and just trying to get things figured out, and of course you say that you don't want it to affect you, but it does. You know, it's tough when you're getting really good contact and lining out to short or lining out to second. And really with Miguel, it's a guy that you can put at second and you can trust his ability at second base. But on the offensive side, sitting in the nine spot is where he started the season. And I, you know, the intent with Sace is that he can, as we talked about earlier, float the lineup back to the top and give them some action. But I have no doubt that Miguel Giraldo, as the season goes on here, maybe in the month of May, he's going to be inspired by the performances that he's seeing from some of these guys that, again, he had one of the better BABIPs on the team last year with just the contact that he's able to get. So it's just a matter of time, I think, really, between Rainer and Miguel. as they continue to try to get the seasons going. On the pitching side, we mentioned Devereaux Harrison, now three consecutive five-inning starts where he was a back-end guy at Long Beach State. He's now into this position where, in hearing from him personally, say, you know, in the first innings, he gets a couple of hits, maybe a run comes across in the first two innings. That old notion of, you know, I have now failed my job, but that's not the case. I have four more starts or three more innings or four more innings, whatever it may be. And again, the run support that he's going to get as well. So I think getting to the double A level, just getting acclimated, we're going to see Devereaux continue to be an innings eater. Abdiel Mendoza had the lowest ERA on the Fisher Cats for a long time. And same with Alejandro Melian, who came in last night, and where Somerset had scored runs in the first three innings. Kind of a surprise on Adam Macko, where we really weren't expecting that. Mac's been phenomenal to start the year, and those are going to happen. It's a team that was locked into them, where they saw a really good start in Manchester. So it was a tough three innings for Mac. And then Alejandro Melian comes in and sits him down, and no runs through his time on the mound. And then he was pulled out. It was a bullpen game last night, but really impressed by those guys. And again, the middle innings guys that you see in New Hampshire have not really gotten a lot of the rave. It's been the front end and the back end guys that kind of get a majority of the talk. But those two pitchers, I think, are really solid that we're going to see continue to settle in. Trent Palmer and CJ Van Eyck have been working in piggyback starts, and we're going to see that here today with Palmer getting the nod, and then CJ is going to bring up the back end three innings. That has been working to start, but they're still trying to get comfortable on that three-man or that two-man piggyback start. So it's just been great to see so far. And again, you know, a lot of games that they've put up some big runs. But the nights where the offense isn't there, continuing to try to get the pitching staff up to a point where they can keep the doors shut until the offense arrives.
Well, Chris, you're wrapping up the series in Somerset over the course of this weekend, and then you're back at Club Ned for Harrisburg, taking on the Washington Nationals affiliate. That's Tuesday, May 7th through Sunday, May 12th. How can we keep up with the Cats, as well as tune into the broadcast yourself, Ian Unsworth, and of course, the big lipper, Bob Lippman, 1,500 Fisher Cats games since 2004. We're going to celebrate him when we get him on the nest at some point, but how can we follow along?
At Fisher Cats on all socials, and then nhfishercats.com is where you can go to check us out. We do no longer with GIR. We now have the Stream Guys stream that is free anywhere that you want to listen to. You just go to the TV streaming options on our page and click listen live. It's been a transition, but it's really been one that we've been able to work with. And happy to give an audio, you know, a free audio only stream to fans for both home and road games. Of course, home games are on MILB TV for subscribers. That's the way that you can listen. It's been an adjustment, kind of taking things in and pretty much building a broadcast, running everything right from the booth. We'd be happy to have any listeners that we can.
CTJ, Chris Jarrett, thank you very much, my friend. We're looking forward to more opportunities for you to join the nest all season long. Go get those dastardly Yankees the rest of the weekend. Thanks for your time.
Let's do it, Zach. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, Larry Larson, time for your official Around the Nest debut, coming to us from Dunedin, where it has been the best of times and the worst of times. Larry, wow, what a whipsaw of a 2024 so far.
Dude, it's been interesting, that's for sure. Highest of highs to the lowest of lows. Team starts 8-2, best 10-game start since 2014. And then an immediate turn south almost directly right after a 6-game win streak. How about a 9-game losing streak? Still trying to get back on the right track. Team has lost 12 of 14 games. So it's been tough. It's been tough on a lot of these guys because this is really their first taste of full season pro ball. It's a very young roster. So a lot of guys just still trying to get their feet wet.
What's been the vibe? I know I said in the show rundown, let's do a vibe check, and you alluded to it there. Can you almost put on your, let's say, therapist hat for a moment here and see what might be some of the factors involved? I know there's been some bad luck running up against some very talented teams as well, or talented players in other organizations. So just from your perspective in the press box, what has gone wrong during this recent slide?
Oh, you know, a lot of it falls on the offense. But me personally, looking at Baseball Savant, and one of the beautiful things about the Florida State League is you got those StatCast numbers. So you can point to those as results when maybe the traditional box score isn't going your way. And that's how I'd sum it up, especially for this lineup. a lot of guys are hitting the ball hard. Tucker Thomann hitting the ball hard. Joan Helaponte is crushing it right now. But the hits aren't coming, especially in some big spots. That's stats-wise. You know, I think personnel-wise, the vibes are good. I got to be honest. This is not a team that if you're around them every day, you'd expect to have this many losses or 12 losses in their last 14 games. This is a bunch of guys led by a manager in Jose Mayorga, who was a player in the Blue Jays system not too long ago, who like to keep it loose, good personalities, a lot of smiles during batting practice, a lot of dancing during batting practice. So I don't think the losses are getting to their head, but maybe it's more the hard hit balls that aren't dropping that are getting in their head. And it's tough because, again, a lot of young guys still trying to build up their routine as professionals, especially the guys coming, getting drafted out of high school or signed, you know, internationally, Venezuela, Dominican Republic, what have you, that maybe aren't seeing things go their way.
Tell me a little bit about some of those top prospects. You mentioned Tucker. Of course, Arjun Namal is down there, part of the fun. We've had some unfortunate injury news from a couple of ranked prospects as well. So can you just give us a little bit of a report on some of those guys that fans may already have heard about?
Yeah, 8 in the top 30 pipeline list. So coming into opening day, the expectations were already sky high. And then almost immediately, we got our taste of the injury bug with Brandon Barriera going down. And that was just brutal to see the reaction almost immediately, knowing that was probably an arm injury and a good chance that it would end his season. And it did with Brandon undergoing Tommy John earlier this week. But just in my short time around him, it's really clear to me that he's a hard worker, great mental fortitude. I think he's a guy that's going to come back stronger from Tommy John. But Landon Marotis also landing on the IL with a forearm injury. No official diagnosis that I've heard yet. It does appear to be less serious, which is fortunate because Landon has been just so nasty to open the year. His stuff is as loud as can be. Fastball, not necessarily overpowering, but can touch the high 90s. But it's the curveball that really jumps out to me. We live in a slider society, but his curveball is just unbelievable, falls off the table. That's the pitching side of things, a bit of a microcosm of what we've seen at the big league level with the arm injuries. On the hitting side of things, Arjun Namala started pretty hot, picked up his first homer of the year off a big leaguer, Sawyer Gibson Long, first weekend of the year. Since then, he's really, really cooled off. Strikeouts have piled up, and I think the frustration has definitely played a role, but you continue to hear rave reviews from the coaching staff on this guy, on his extra work before and after games, constantly in the batting cages, just trying to figure things out. So Arjun has been slow at the plate. His defense has been solid. Tucker Thomann, a guy that I know, you know, organizationally is really beloved by the player development staff, a guy with a really mature approach, comes from a good baseball background. He's one of those guys, Exhibit A, crushing the baseball. He's got three homers, and all of those three homers came in the first 14 games. Last year, he only hit 5 home runs. So whether that's a byproduct of his work over the offseason or just something that's kind of come with development or more experience at the single-A level, I don't know. But he's hitting the ball noticeably harder. But with that, he's also striking out a fair amount. One thing to note with Tucker is he has not been able to hit from the right side very much. He's only had 9 at-bats from the right side without a hit there yet. I think he banged up his wrist a few weeks ago, and that's kind of affected his right-handed swing. So he's been hitting predominantly from the left side, but that stroke has looked really good. And then Joan Helaponte, somebody was joking on Twitter about how I've been raving about him on the broadcast, but it's hard not to. He's another one of those guys that always has a smile on his face. Jose Mayorga loves him, and he's been pounding the baseball. His last 2 nights, 7 hard hit balls, 95 miles per hour or more off the bat. Just 3 of them have been hits, including last night, his first 3 at-bats, all hard hit balls, all flyouts to center, and then he hit a home run in the 7th. Inning. So hit a ball where nobody could get to it. But Aponte's been really impressive so far this year.
Can you tell us lastly about Connor O'Halloran. Seems like he has been a bright spot.
He has. I was texting with Ian Unsworth about it. He's kind of a throwback. Lefty, you know, won't overpower you. Fastball in the low to mid 90s. A guy that can really locate well. Obviously a mature college arm. Just kind of a grinder type of guy who never wants to come out of a game. Type of guy who really wants to go out there and pitch well enough to get the win. And he sure did that earlier this week. Really good breaking stuff. The slider is drawing a lot of swings and misses. And he's been impressive to open the year. Again, not an overpowering guy. We live in a society where velocity is kind of top of mind for a lot of guys. But his fastball right around 92, 93, and it's been really effective. So far, so good for Connor.
Well, looking forward to meeting him here in Vancouver, hopefully before the season is out. Larry, as always, with every level on the nest, every stop we make up and down the ladder, tell us how we can follow along with the DJs as well as tune into your broadcasts each game.
Yes, sir. So you can follow us on social media at Dunedin Blue Jays. I also put out a good amount of tweets, or at least try throughout the week, at MLB Larry is my handle. And then to tune in, we've got an audio stream for home games and then a handful of road games, not all of them quite yet. But you can find that on our website, DunedinBlueJays.com. And then new for this year, every home game on MILB.TV, the video stream, new and improving by the day. So hope you can join us there for folks that have at-bat subscriptions or MILB-TV subscriptions. So that's been fun.
Right guy, right spot. Double L, Larry Larson, thank you very much for your time, my friend. Go DJs. It's going to turn around. It feels like the vibes, thanks to Jose Mayorga and the staff, are staying high. We will be rooting for Single A Dunedin, that's for sure. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, sir. Great to meet you, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
As we do here on Around the Nest, as we get to the end of our episode here, we haven't heard much about High A Vancouver because I'm yapping away, talking with our other friends on the Nest here. And of course, what we'll do as the season continues in 2024, for the first time in my tenure with the Seas, we have a broadcast assistant in Vancouver, Chris Georges, who's also the voice of the UBC Thunderbirds. And so we will get Chris on and have him give some updates on Vancouver so everyone's not suffering through just me going on and on via monologue. But a few things to note about the 9 and 11 Vancouver Canadians, other than the weather. And producer Leo Mui, I'm working on that request to get the weather right for your visit to the Nat on Tuesday. But some things to note for the Seas. The starting rotation has been fantastic. They enter play tonight here in Pasco, Washington, with a 2.89 ERA as a team. That's the second best in the circuit. The only one better is Spokane at 1.79, and they have Chase Dolander, who's the number two Rockies prospect and was an early round, first round pick last year, as well as a lefty, Sean Sullivan, who's been really good. So they've been pitching quite well, but the Seas certainly keeping up, and weather be darned, they have found ways to stay hot despite that long layoff over those four games Thursday through Sunday last week at the Nat. So the 2.89 ERA as a staff, certainly a very positive sign. Chris McIlvain, who was the return in the Santiago Espinal trade with the Reds at the end of spring training this year, he made his best start in the org last night and was in line for the victory until the Canadians had a win stolen from them by the Angels affiliate, the Tri-City Dust Devils, with two runs in the bottom of the ninth. But McIlvain with the second quality start for a Canadians pitcher here in 2024, six innings, scattered four hits, gave up one run, walked a guy, struck out five, looked very dominant and in command from start to finish. He was great to watch. Ryan Jennings has been fantastic, the fourth rounder out of Louisiana Tech. He has been at the top of the rotation and in four games has a 0.56 ERA. Really good stuff from Ryan Jennings. And in the bullpen, which started out as a bit of a weakness for the Seas, guys have been emerging and making their presence felt. We've got a couple of guys referencing Pat's comment earlier in our program today about how there's lots of a log jam kind of up and down the system. Chris Jared mentioned it as well with some guys in AA who could be in AAA. There are guys in Vancouver who could very well be in New Hampshire or even Buffalo. Most notably, Justin Kelly, who's back with his third season. He got the final three outs in the Northwest League Championship clinching game last year. Connor Larkin, another one of those guys. Two guys who have been very good as advertised in relief and being some of that veteran presence in the bullpen, certainly helping the cause. A guy who, for me, has been the best reliever of the year so far, 21-year-old right-hander Rafael Ohashi, who is following in Eric Pardino's footsteps steps as trying to become another Brazilian reliever to make some noise in the Northwest League. And Hashi has only allowed no runs, none, zero. In fact, he's got the longest scoreless inning streak for any Canadiens pitcher, starter, or reliever at 9 2/3 innings, and he's made 6 appearances this year, looking very dominant. In fact, he faced one batter over the minimum and earned the win 2 days ago against these Tri-City Dust Devils, and he leads the club with 2 wins to none. Another guy to keep an eye on, in his third season with Vancouver, Nazwell Paulino, the lefty, he comes in, and he seems to be almost like a mercenary. Bring the lefty in, have him get a couple of outs, and then bring somebody else in to start a clean inning the next time. So Nazwell Paulino, for me, one of those guys who could certainly make that jump to double A sooner rather than later. And we'll wrap up with a couple of looks at some hitters. Ryan McCarty, D3 player of the year out of Penn State Abington, joined the Canadiens halfway through last year. He was named the Northwest League Player of the Week April 8th through 14th. He was phenomenal in that series against Hillsborough, which wrapped up with the improbable 5-run comeback, all 5 runs scoring with 2 outs. 7-3 was going to be the final, but the Seas rallied and won 8-7 a couple of weeks ago. Ryan McCarty at the center of that. Also important to note, Nick Goodwin and Jace Borfin in the center of the order. Goodwin started hot, has cooled a bit, but is starting to emerge once again. And Jace Borfin, well, he has yet to go deep in a game, and he's got plenty of pop. He is, in fact, among league leaders in walks, and so a top 30 prospect for the Blue Jays, making his presence felt. We talked about Desaun Brown earlier, and Desaun certainly doing what he needs to do on offense, at least to start the year in these cold conditions. The Oakville, Ontario native entered last night's game batting .262, 5 RBI. He had a 12-game on base streak at one point. That is still the team high. So certainly Desaun doing the things he needs to do in the first month of the season to what we hope will be a midsummer promotion or sooner as he joins a very talented outfield in AA New Hampshire. So lots of good, despite the 9-11 record, third-year skipper and North Delta BC native Brent LaValle, he's always setting the vibes, and things are looking very good for the Seas. Record aside, they are in every game and looking forward to getting back to the Nat May 7th. That's coming up Tuesday as we welcome the Mariners affiliate, the Everett Aqua Sox, for their first visit to Rogers Field at Nat Bailey Stadium. No better way to end at the Nat, where Leo, our producer, will be on Tuesday. But truly a great first episode of 2024, as we are so grateful for Pat, grateful for Chris, and of course grateful for Larry making their time available for us as we talk about Blue Jays minor leaguers and have some fun along the way. But that's what you can expect all season long, all part of the Artificial Turf Wars podcast universe, if you will. Excited to be a part of the family and looking forward to talking Blue Jays baseball all season long. This has been another episode of Around the Nest.